thought I forgot where I was in Hebrews, but I haven't. Nope, I know exactly where I left off. Yeah, I get on these sidetracks. That's true. They're profitable. You guys like them. I like them. And we get right back, hit the ground running back in Hebrews chapter 12. Going to end the week with a reconnection with the book we've been studying, Hebrews. Hi, everybody. This is Martin Zender. Welcome to the Friday edition of the show. Glad to have you with me. And, you know, I really am still puzzled as to why. Oh, first of all, thank you for your emails. And thank you for to those who have contributed. I read everything. I fawn over those of you who contribute to this ministry. I just look at those emails and shake my head and wonder. It's like God has executed another miracle on my behalf. I know you. I know your name. I know what you're doing for this ministry. I'm behind in my thank yous. I'm behind in my email. Sometimes it just gets overwhelming to me, but I cannot tell you how grateful I am for your love and your support. And from the bottom of my heart, I say thank you to each one of you. I literally could not keep doing this without your help. That's the only way I do it. As I told you before, I have not made any money from books. Oh, speaking of books, I have the proof copy of How to Quit Church Without Quitting God. It's in. The proof copy, the collector's edition, hardback of the Clanging Gong News. These are some of the most beautiful books I've ever seen. I am so happy with this printing company, and it's once I've got some on order now, and once they come in full scale, then we're going to offer them. But they're here. They're done. Paperback version of How to Quit Church Without Quitting God. It's beautiful. I love it. And the collector's edition hardback of the Clanging Gong News, every issue under one cover. It's amazing. I mean, I'm really happy about it. Thankful to God for making this happen, because the technical hurdles to producing these books are unimaginable. I mean, for somebody like me, I don't know how it happens. I get a lot of help from here, but I got to do a lot myself, and it's just an amazing mental hurdle for me. It's really hard for me to do technical things. I can write all day, but when it comes to putting this stuff in a practical format, in a nice-looking format, you won't believe the technical hurdles. You would blanch, you know, you really would. So I'm thankful to God for this, and going to be offering these soon. So what I was saying there is, I don't know why anyone would want to read this from Hebrews chapter 12, verse 18, and want to be a part of it. Again, Hebrews is written to Hebrews. Isn't that a great revelation? I'm a JetBlue genius. Hebrews is written to Hebrews, not to the nations, not to the body of Christ, to those in Israel who are coming into the 1,000-year kingdom. But even they are looking at an improvement, because their first contact with God was Mount Sinai. Well, not their first, but that when they God formed them as a official nation, nación oficial, at the foot of Mount Sinai, this is what they beheld. Verse 18, for you have not come to that which may be handled. In other words, you have not come now, at this present time, when Paul's writing Hebrews here, to that. But this is what they were familiar with. You have not come to that which may be handled and burned with fire, into murkiness and gloom and tornado and the blare of a trumpet and the sound of declarations, which those who hear refuse, that no word be added to them, for they did not carry out the assignment. And if a wild beast should come in contact with the mountain, that is Mount Sinai, it shall be pelted with stones. And so fearful was the spectacle, Moses himself said, terrified am I, and in a tremor. But you have come. And in other words, your ancestors dealt with that. Your ancestors had to deal with that scary mountain, the thunder, the lightning. An animal touched it and had to be killed for the glory of God that was on that mountain. And there was murkiness and gloom. Listen to these words, murkiness and gloom. So how crazy is it to take this chapter of Hebrews, apply it to yourself today? It was crazy even for the Israelites to whom Paul was writing the book of Hebrews to apply that to themselves. So how crazy is it for modern day Christians to apply the old thing to themselves? The old thing being the murkiness, the gloom, the tornado, the blare of the trumpet, the sound of the declarations. But Christians love this stuff. They love the murkiness and the scariness and the mystery. And they're going to be the only ones who know the mystery. And they're going to be able to do the law. And they're going to do the law. And you're not going to be able to do the law. And they're going to glory in the law. And they're going to hold it against you if you don't do the law. And they're going to somehow, with great audacity and stupidity, hold themselves up to the standard of the law and think that God's going to accept them by those standards. And they're going to be sorely disappointed. And I can't believe they're actually going to go through with it. But they are. They're going to actually stand before God and say, we did the law. Well, at least we tried to do the law. And God's going to say, if you're not doing all the law, you're failing in all the law. If you're missing it in one point, you've missed the whole thing. Bye-bye now. Bye-bye now. But even a... No, I won't say even a dumb Israelite, because a dumb Israelite will still be striving according to Moses and really still be looking for the Messiah. But an astute Israelite, and there are some today, I believe, will come to the next verse of this chapter. But you modern Israelites, that is modern in the year 63 or 67, whenever Paul wrote this letter, you have come to Mount Zion and the city of the living God's celestial Jerusalem, and to 10,000 messengers, to a universal convocation. I'm going to tell you what that is in a second here, or what I think it is, and to the ecclesia of the firstborn, that is the firstborn among Israelites, registered in the heavens, their names are written down in the book of life. Doesn't mean they're ministering in heaven. And to God, the judge of all, and to the spirits of the just perfected, and to Jesus, the mediator of a fresh, love that word, fresh. You remember that dough guy, Pillsbury Doughboy? Fresh, popping fresh rolls. You take that little canister of rolls and bang it on the counter. I can still see my mom doing that. You just boom, bang it on the corner of the counter and fresh, popping fresh. A fresh covenant. And to the blood of sprinkling, which is speaking better than Abel. I got thoughts on this. Certain thoughts. Very certain thoughts. First, I'm going to read a passage from A.E. Knock's Concordant Commentary. That's Knock. K-N-O-C-H. Not K-N-O-X. It's not Knox. I'm using the possessive. A.E. Knock's. K-N-O-C-H. The nation in the wilderness at Mount Sinai came to the terrible spectacle which inaugurated the law. You can read about that, by the way, in Exodus 19, 12 through 20. The whole scene was prophetic of the relation they would sustain to Jehovah under the legal covenant. And it was a much stipulated relation. It was contingent upon their behavior, on their doing the law. He forbade a near approach under pain of death. Only his representative Moses could go. Nobody else could come near. Not even a goat or a cow could go near, or they had to stone it if it even touched the mountain. I would definitely be putting a police tape. Maybe Moses had his equivalent of police tape. Do not cross. That yellow tape, do not cross. Because some, you know, you have to know when you're on the mountain. You couldn't even touch the mountain. Well, are the foothills, does that count as the mountain? Yeah, I bet it did. So I'd be erecting some do not cross tape. It brought no peace or assurance. No peace, no assurance, but fear and terror. This is the function of the law. Attention, Christians, and anybody who thinks they're supposed to do the law. It brought fear and terror. This is the function of the law. Fear and terror. 2 Corinthians chapter 3, Paul calls the law a dispensation of condemnation and death. Yeah, that sounds real attractive. This is the function of the law. It came not to bring them near to God, but to convict them of their inability and unworthiness. You're supposed to come away from the law feeling debilitated and unworthy. And where are you supposed to turn? To your Messiah, who fulfilled the law for you. Now, there's a huge contrast, obviously, between the scene presented to the physical eye, to the Israelites who were actually at Mount Sinai, and to Moses himself, between that and the prospect of faith in connection with the new covenant. Mount Sinai was a very, very primitive aspect of God. And we know that when, as God unveils himself through the eons, he reveals more of his heart. As we progress on the Aeonian timetable, we see God from this austere presentation. It's not that God has changed, because God is not a man, he does not change. But his presentation changes. And he does that for the benefit of those he's presenting to. We have to know his power and glory before we know his heart. We have to know his power before we become intimates with him and realize the blessedness of having fellowship with him and access to his throne. So the home of Israel in the future is going to be the new earth. That's why Paul's talking about you have come to a celestial Jerusalem. So he first presents, Paul does, Christ as that frightening force in the wilderness. But now he's saying, but you've come to not lightning, but light. Isn't that a great contrast? You've come to light instead of lightning. I'd much rather have that. And instead of being warned away from the mountain because by touching it you could die, the saints of Israel in the fifth eon, in the celestial Jerusalem, they're going to dwell very near to him and enjoy the fruits of the tree of life. And they're going to drink from the river of life and eat from the fruit of the tree of life. Now, in Acts, how am I doing on time? All right. In Acts chapter 7, all right, I'm going to have to stop. Look, I want to talk about, what I want to talk about on Monday is Acts chapter 7, that the law was given by a mandate of messengers. In other words, it came to be through intermediaries. Now, we're going to see angels again. Remember, we're looking at a mountain where Paul's drawing contrast here. We're looking at a mountain, Mount Sinai, that was scary, that was murky and gloomy and lightnings. And then we're looking at a new mountain and a river and all these things in the celestial Jerusalem. So they're seeing a contrast. And we're going to see another contrast with angels. Before, the law was handed down by angels. And now we're going to see angels again involved, and yet it's going to be in a positive aspect. So that's going to be cool. And we're looking at, there was a convocation of people. People gathered around Mount Sinai and said, all that God will say, we will do. Well, there's another convocation in the heavens who are going to be supervising the discipline of Israel in the tribulation in order to bring them to an awareness of their calling and to purify them, bring them into the kingdom finally. Hebrews is a book of contrasts, where Paul's bringing a better covenant to the Israelites. He's bringing a better priesthood. He's bringing a better law, a better high priest. And yet, in spite of all this, some of the Israelites will remain in the old. And in spite of all this, some people today who are not even Israelites will camp in the old Israelite scene. They won't even go to the new Israelite scene, to the new Jerusalem, the celestial Jerusalem. They're still in the law. And so we who are in the body of Christ, how far removed are we even from the present day Israel who are supposed to be embracing the glories of Aeon 5. The consummations of the eons has attained to us. We have a much higher calling among the celestials. So we're looking at this, we're studying it in order to know about it, but this is not our call.